Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to Aggressive Negotiations, the Nerd Party's special Star Wars podcast that explores the nooks and crannies of the Star Wars galaxy. I'm one of your hosts, Jedi Master John Mills, and with me as always is Jedi Master Matthew Rushing. Matt, how you doing?
John, I'm doing great. You know, I'm just so excited to be back. I like to think of us as the podcast where it's nothing but Star Wars goodness, and I have no idea what kind of Star Wars goodness you got for me today, John. So I'm sitting here on the edge of my seat waiting for you to ask me some kind of Star Wars question.
You know what? And I will ask you that question because I would be, wait for it, remiss if I didn't. There you go. okay. You know, I was thinking.
It's a dangerous pastime.
I know. We did a commentary for Star Wars for our 50th episode. Then we looked at Uncle Owen, and I was thinking to myself, you know, we really do take a deep dive look at characters. And something that occurred to me is that you and I, you know, we've talked about Rogue One. We had Nick on the show to talk about Rogue One and his reactions to it. But something that really strikes me that is a gap for us is looking at the main characters of this new era of Star Wars as we have them up to this point. Specifically, we've entered the era of the female-led Star Wars movie. We have Rey and we have Jyn, two decidedly different characters. But what I was thinking was it would be interesting, and I want to get your thoughts on this. When comparing Rey and Jyn, what is it that we see that is similar? What is it that we see that is different, and what is it that they can tell us as characters about this new era of Star Wars that we've entered into? So I suppose that's my first question is, what do they tell you, Matt, as a longtime Star Wars fan, about this era of Star Wars fandom that we've entered?
That they're really not all that different from the male heroes. And before anybody crucifies me, hear me out. My point in that is that they have many of the same traits and issues that we saw in our male heroes throughout all the rest of the Star Wars films. You know, they have daddy issues, they have family issues, they have abandonment issues, and I mean, all of these kind of things are now getting to be portrayed in the opposite sex. And I think that's so interesting to just be able to watch these women mirror the stories that we got with Anakin and Luke and, you know, those kind of things. So it to me, what it says is that we're going to honor the storytelling that we've seen in Star Wars before. We just want to give you maybe a new perspective. And I really like that because it's different and similar all at the same time. And I think that shows that the creators behind Star Wars right now have put a lot of thought into what they want to do, but also how they want to continue the lineage of storytelling that was started by Lucas.
You know, I think it's very interesting and very apt that you point out family issues, but in specific father issues, because I think with Rey and with Jyn, what's very interesting about it is Jyn witnesses the death of her mother, but the remaining issues are with her father, who is still alive and presumably helping the Empire. She doesn't want to think anything of him initially. But Rey mirrors Luke very much in the fact that she's an open book in terms of both parents are gone. But at the end, regardless of how the relationship works out, and I have my own theories about her lineage and everything, but regardless of how it works out, she is in pursuit of Luke, who basically at the end, that it very much comes across, a lot of people walked out of the film thinking, father, that's her dad. I'm not saying that they're necessarily right. I'm not even saying that I necessarily agree with it. I'm just saying that it's very interesting that we do have these family issues, but it's much clearer with Jin than it is with Rey. And do you think that Jin is who she is because her family issues are much clearer to her, whereas Rey has a much more nebulous general family issue through the film?
Well, it is interesting because, again, I think they're very similar in the sense that, you know, Rey has daddy issues specifically, and you can see how she warms up to the tutelage and kind of taking under his wing that Han starts to do to her. And it's a temptation to her to, you know, join the Falcon, be part of the crew, to have that relationship, that mentorship, and I say it, that father figure in her life that she has been missing, that she seems to be desiring, not just father figure, but that parental care. You know, that feeling that somebody cares about me the way a father or a mother care about their child. And, you know, you see the same thing in Jin. She's just a lot more jaded about it. You know, she has a lot more issues because where she thinks her father might be, you know, he might be the murderer of the galaxy.
Right.
You know, she doesn't know until that point in the movie, obviously, where she sees the hologram and everything for her breaks down because all the resentment and hate that she had towards this guy. And if you read the novelization, she even calls him, I think, that bastard, you know. She talks in her head about how she kind of hates him. All of those things, it all melts away because she realizes that he was the very best version that she kind of probably always harbored in her heart that he was. She just couldn't necessarily get herself to believe that that was actually true. Right. And so it's really interesting that they have some of the same issues, but they come at it differently because, again, Jin is so jaded where she is in her life, and she's been through so much junk. And, you know, as bad as Rey's had it, she's had a pretty steady life on Jakku for, you know,
right,
quite a few years. And so,
well, I see that's interesting too, because I, you know, the very clear parallel with Luke and Anakin with Rey is there, you know, no question, you know, orphan, desert planet, harsh life. You know, the similarity between Unkar Plutt and Watto is there, and, you know, you have all of those sorts of things. So everything sort of screams Skywalker, but she lacks the traumatic call to action that happens with Luke. Luke is going to stay. Luke is like Rey, and Rey is like Luke. I'm going to stay. Rey gets chased out by helping someone, whereas Luke has his call to action as traumatic. Jin, I suppose you could make the argument, is, in a sense, her traumatic happening is so young in her life, that's what gives her that harder edge. Because she's not one to sit around. She doesn't sit around. She goes out. She's in the galaxy. She's, you know, obviously Saw Gerrera is her mentor. And, you know, he says specifically in the film, you know, and she says specifically in the film, you left me alone when I was 16 with a gun and you were like, good, you know, you just disappeared. So, you know, her second father figure abandons her. So in a sense, is there more similarity between Jin and Luke or Jin and Anakin that we're not seeing? Because she has, you know, the witness to death and separation, but then she also has the loss of her second father figure, you know, later in her life, that serves as a dramatic moment, you know, a dramatic call. Do you think that there's any argument for some similarities between Jin and Luke?
No, I absolutely agree with you. I think that there really is a connection there that might not be seen on first or second or third viewing even. It really takes a lot of thought to kind of think through the storyline and how the character's progressing, why they're progressing, as you're kind of pointing out, you know, the things that move Jin forward, and the fact that she has a couple of traumatic experiences that kind of push her forward is very interesting. Luke is the same way, you know. Horrible loss of aunt and uncle, and horrible loss of actual father. and father figure. So, I mean, it's like she has both. I mean, she has three. So, whereas I think the interesting thing about Rey, she has the traumatic experience of being left on Jakku, and she can remember that.
Right.
But she's also so young that it's more of the, I feel like it's more the nebulous nightmare, and maybe we'll find that there's more to it than that. But I think this is the other difference is that, you know, Jin has one storyline in one movie, and we have the joy of seeing the entire arc. Whereas, you know, at the moment where we are now here in 2017, before episode 8, The Last Jedi comes out, Rey is still very much JJ's mystery box. There's so much about her that we don't know, that hasn't been unpacked, and is still very nebulous. And so that's the other hard thing, is that there's some similarities or differences, obviously, but Jin, we know her story and it's over. What we don't know is really most of Rey's story.
But what's so interesting, and you point this out, that their characters are more similar to the male characters we've encountered before, is they're both reluctant to be heroes, which is something that, you know, Luke is reluctant. He doesn't want to leave home, but once he goes on his journey, he embraces it. And you see that with Rey and Jin as well. And so Anakin becomes the outlier, because Anakin, you know, bye, Mom. Like, his thought of what's going to happen to Mom is literally an afterthought to his joy at being allowed to go be a Jedi. So I think it would be interesting as well to sort of, you know, cast a contrast between Anakin slash Vader, who remains the focal point. We haven't had a storyline that doesn't, you know, touch on him still. And I think it's so interesting how that outlier can serve as a useful contrast for Luke, for Rey, for Jin, in terms of their approach to heroism. Why is it that we embrace? I mean, Anakin was not embraced the same way that Luke was, that Rey has been, or even that Jin has been. Is there something about the reluctant hero in these two characters, in Jin and Rey, that makes them resonate more than, because, you know, because the prequels came out after the original? So I'm talking about release order. Is there something about a reluctant hero that resonates more with people than the person that wants to go off and do the heroic act?
I think it could come down to the fact that Anakin, aside from what you see in the Clone Wars, there's this arrogance about him, you know, and it's even in the Clone Wars, but he also has so many more likable parts to himself. You know, you really get to see those on display. And I think that, you know, Luke is the classic kind of hero. He is the quintessential hero, and the way Hamill plays him and everything, I think, wins you over, especially by the end of the film. Jin, I think, is a hero that feels very modern in a lot of ways, that kind of jaded hero that we're used to seeing. So it's in our milieu now, and it feels comfortable for us to watch. And, you know, again, Rey is very much in the mold of a Luke Skywalker too. She's affable, she's fun, she's likable, and there's nothing about her that turns you off. There's something about Anakin and his character, even in The Phantom Menace a little bit, where there's this arrogance that kind of just turns you off to him just enough. You know, like there's that character flaw that's evident from the very beginning. Whereas these other characters, even though they have their flaws, I don't think they do that thing where they might turn you against them. It's more endearing. Mm-hmm. Their flaws become endearing, whereas Anakin's, I think, don't as much. Unless you start to really study the character of Anakin and you see how anybody can get pulled into misplaced love and attachment that would lead them down a very dark path because they don't know when it's okay to let go, you know? And maybe that's because Anakin is the dark part of ourselves that we don't like looking at either, so...
Sure, sure. And, you know, and I think that, you know, I think that there is actually a redemptive arc with Jin that, you know, there is a part of me that will always wish that there had been a little bit more fleshed out on screen. I know that we're going to be getting further ancillary materials, you know, canon materials, so to speak, that fill in some of those gaps. But... I think that there is a redemptive arc with Jin. I do think you have to work a little bit to get there. But, you know, of the two, of Rey and Jin, I think Jin starts out just, you know, a shade closer to Anakin. Do whatever it takes to get the job done. You know, devil may care. You know, I'll kill whoever I need to get to what I want. You know, that sort of attitude. And she has a redemptive arc after, you know, the midpoint of the film. You know, she becomes more heroic after she's, you know, after we've gone through some of this journey with her. If you look at the way Rey interacts with the characters around her, as she encounters Finn, as she encounters Poe, as she encounters Han, Chewie, and everybody, to get to your point about she's more like Luke and she's, you know, a very friendly, open person, Jin is very much more closed off. Everybody has to work to get to know her. And I think that is an interesting, you know, contrast between the two of them as well. Is there something to be said for the fact that they're products of two different eras? Do you think that Jin speaks more about the era that, you know, like do these two characters tell us about the eras that they're coming out of in terms of the story?
You put Jin back in the time period of the original trilogy. And you think of where George is coming from with the late 70s, and so many people are disillusioned. You kind of got the anti-hero being the thing that really reigns. And Jin goes from anti-hero to hero, like you're saying in the story. Whereas I think Rey is in a position in her storyline. The galaxy is at this kind of relative peace. You know, there's some uneasiness, but it's found an equilibrium of peace again. Right. And so there is a little bit more, there was until the Republic gets blown up, probably a more sense of some hope and optimism in the galaxy, but now it's kind of sliding back into some darkness. So I think that's going to be very interesting to see if there's any turn or twist or challenge to Rey's character. Yeah. And I mean that in the sense of morality and who she is and her virtue, whether there's any challenge to that, the same way there was for Luke in Empire Strikes Back, the call of the dark side, the call to join that evil, that darkness that's starting to creep back into the galaxy big time.
Yeah, you know, it's funny though, because I think you rightly point out Jin is, you know, an echo of the era that gave birth to Star Wars. You know, that cynicism that Lucas said, you know, I wanted to give people, you know, a good, wholesome adventure, something that they could say that there is something more to look forward to, that we can make a better future for ourselves. But it's interesting because Jin is in the same time period as Luke, and Rey is more evocative of Luke. Jin is more evocative, you know, at the beginning of Anakin, I would say. Do you think that you could, I mean, again, we're fans, we're coming at this. Sometimes, you know, you find unique things when you're reading a little too much into things, but that's what makes it fun to begin with. Is it possible that we could go back and we could say the moment at which the dawn starts anew is actually now with Jin, when she becomes more heroic, when she accepts an heroic stature, and that is where things tip, which paves the way for Luke, who is the purely heroic character, to come in. And so they wind up, basically, we could go back and we could, you know, we're used to thinking of, you know, the entire fate of the galaxy, rightly so. I'm not taking anything away from Luke blowing up the Death Star, Luke being ascendant is the thing, you know, it's the pivot. But I guess you know, Jin is the one that pushes the lever, you know, that gets that rolling. What do you think about that? Do you think that that is a way we could carry even more meaning into Jin's story arc?
I think that's really interesting because I think what it is think of it this way. There's the pendulum swings in Star Wars, and right. the prequels is all about it swinging towards the dark side. And it hits its zenith, you know, in the dark times. But then the rebellion slowly gains some momentum and it begins to shift that pendulum back. That momentum starts with characters like Bail Organa. It starts with Mon Mothma, Ahsoka, and, you know, what we see in the Rebels TV show as they all begin to slowly swing that back. And what I think is that Luke becomes the pinnacle of the pendulum swing in the original trilogy when he obviously helps redeem his father.
Sure.
And but I would say that you're absolutely right. I think Jin is the one who becomes the kicker to really swing that, you know, to really get that swing yeah. in high gear. Because it's been a really slow burn for 19 years until she comes around. She takes matters into her own hands. They go to Scarif. They steal the plans. I mean, let's just call it serious badassery to take it upon herself to save the galaxy. I think it's really cool to be able to think of it in those major emotional turns of the galaxy and how important that Jin is. And then, like you said, kind of where we see maybe how it might play out for Rey.
And we're focused on Jin and Rey, but what I think could be informative, as it were, for the story as a whole, is to look also at an echo of Jin in Leia 30 years after Return of the Jedi. Because Leia is the one who... There's almost a sense of history repeating with Mon Mothma. Because Mon Mothma in Rogue One won't authorize Jin to go off and get the plans. And so Jin basically leads a little rebellion within the rebellion. And what we know now is that Leia essentially starts a little rebellion within the Republic. Because she can't get the go-ahead to, you know, to take the course of action that she wants to. So given that Jin then informs Luke, is it Leia that winds up informing Rey? You know, is it Leia's action, Jin-like, to kick things off, and then it's going to be Rey that swings the pendulum the rest of the way?
I like it. I think that makes for a really interesting story point, and it shows just how connected the storylines all are, and it really does a great job of showing how all of the characters are connected and their storylines impact one another. I think that's really a great way to be able to look at that. And I'm thinking about the fact that it's these women who are becoming these linchpins too. And I think that's really, really cool to see how important they are as much as Anakin or Luke or, you know, any Han or any of these other characters. And so that the partnership between the sexes, if we could put it that way.
Right.
Everyone's important. You know, it doesn't matter who you are or where you come from, what gender you are, what species you are in Star Wars, you're all in part of the symbiosis that Obi-Wan talks about all the way back in Episode One.
Ah, that's right. The symbiont circle. What happens to one will affect the other. Yes.
Exactly. Which is a huge part of Star Wars and something that people always said that George didn't really follow up on. But if you follow the prequels and their thematic elements, George is showing how what Obi-Wan is talking about is literally breaking down before your eyes in the next two films.
Yes.
So, but of course, then it begins to build back up because of the rebellion and everything that we've been talking about with those pendulum swings.
Now, one other thing I want to say about these characters, you know, as we're starting to wrap up, is the idea that these are female characters, you know, so that is, you know, the clearest, you know, line of demarcation between the eras. But there is an interesting, and I think Lucas takes a lot of heat, or took a lot of heat, for Padme not being as strong a character as Leia, you know, during that prequel era. But I think what's interesting is if you take everything in story order, you see very much a progression that mirrors through the last, you know, half century or so. Of Padme is very much she turns into very much a just powerless within this story. Like by the time episode 3 rolls around, she's seemingly powerless. There's not much that she's able to enact on the story. And then there's a restoration now with Rey and Jyn and Leia. Like you can see this progression of how women are regarded throughout history. Now, it would be easy to say, oh, okay, but you know, Rogue One came out now, but it takes place back then. But Jyn feels very anachronistic in the world as it exists in Rogue One. And that I think fits. She's anomalous in terms of the greater perception of her sex, you know, in terms of the story. It still feels that way because of the era that it evokes. So, I mean, do you think that there is an argument there that, you know, through this series of movies, you can basically trace the course of, you know, women in society?
No, I think you have a really interesting point there. And one of the things I'm thinking back to is a book that I read on the prequels and their thematic elements called Star Wars Heresies.
Oh, and, you've talked about that before. Yeah, that sounds really good.
It's a great book. It's a great book. If you've never read it, it really is fabulous. And so I highly recommend it to anyone who just would like to understand some of the cultural ideas that George pulled from to tell the stories of the prequels. But one of them was this whole idea of that Padme represents femininity in the galaxy. Everything that is beautiful, everything that is creative and wonderful and lively and vibrant about the galaxy, and that the reason that she diminishes is not because she's not a strong woman, because she's a representation of how all of that is slowly being choked out of the universe by the dark side. And that I think what's so awesome is that you have Rebels with Hera, you have Jyn, you have Mon Mothma, then you have Leia. All of these women represent the force of femininity finally coming back. And if you notice, too, it's also that connection with nature. The hero characters are not just connected with their technology, right, the way the Empire is, but they're always based somewhere that is wild and a part of nature. And they find a way to kind of build themselves into the nature. They don't destroy the nature. They, especially, I think, a Hoth or
right,
any of the bases that we have. So I really think that it's taking that note from George and continuing that on, that as the galaxy becomes less and less tyrannical because the fire of the rebellion takes place, it's a renewing, a rebirth, a phoenix rising moment.
Right.
For femininity, creativity, and all of that to come back, which this is one of the things that bothered me about the design work and everything in the new trilogy so far, is that wasn't represented. That there had been a rediscovery of life again beyond just the past, but creativity and all that. I didn't see it there, and I feel like that's something that George probably would have done because it was referencing this whole idea of rebirth.
Well, I mean that's a little.
That's a whole other subject, probably, but I think that also speaks to why we have these these female characters having more to do, seemingly more to do in these newer films.
Well, to speak to the design aspect, there's very much, you know, the idea that there's a stagnation on both sides, and that's what leads to, you know, the breakdown that we're starting to witness with episode 7. But you're right, that is a whole other conversation, because I've had my own journey with the symbolism and stuff like that. That's, you know, that's apparent there. But I really like those points. I think that they're really valid, really strong. And of course, we would love to get your point of view on these things, on Jin, on Rey, on what they represent, on what the characters mean for the overall story. You can reach out to us over at thenerdparty.com/contact. Look up Aggressive Negotiations. Drop us a note. We'll address it on the air for you. And you can also reach out to us on the Facebook page at facebook.com/thenerdparty. And you can go ahead and you can reach out to us on Twitter. The show account is @TheJediMasters, or you can reach out to us through the network account at @JoinNerdParty. Now, that's where they can get us through all the official channels, Matt. Where can people reach you if they want to talk to you about the symbolism of these characters?
Yeah, you can find me all over the place. I'm on Twitter. MattRushing02 is a great place to find me. On Instagram at MRushing. On the Trek FM network, doing The Orb with Chris Jones, talking about Deep Space Nine. We are crossing our fingers that we'll be back soon, as Chris is continuing to recover. And so we want to be back soon. And, of course, doing the General Geek Show over there, the 602 Club, having a blast doing that. It's so much fun talking about all the fandoms that we love. You can also find Star Wars, the 602 Club collection as well. Both of those are on iTunes. Here on the network, I'm doing another show. It's called Owl Post with Drea Kaufman, and we're walking through Harry Potter. But we're doing it one chapter at a time, so we're taking it slow. We're really trying to dig in, really trying to find the meat, having a blast doing that too. So I hope that you'll check it out. You know, if you've never read Harry Potter, it's a great time to join us, because we're going real slow, so you should be able to do a chapter a week. And if you've read Harry Potter a bunch of times and you want to hear people talk about, you know, it from the beginning and how everything connects and all that kind of stuff, it's a great time to join us as well. So check that out. I think you'll have a good time. Hopefully could, you know, take all these Star Wars fans and get them into being Harry Potter fans. But, John, I'd be remiss if you didn't mention the myriad of places that you are online.
Oh, my name is Kessel Junkie on your social network of choice, by request, Kessel Junkie. Kessel Junkie. That's where you can find me. You can also find me co-hosting a little show with my pal Craig, Words with Nerds. You can find me co-hosting over on the Trek.fm network, Stage 9, exploring the work of Star Trek creators with Mike Schindler. And speaking of Mike Schindler and speaking of creators, right here on the Nerd Party Network, Mike Schindler and I co-host Great Shot Kid, which is a series that explores the work of Star Wars creators, where we go through and we do things like, you know, we are working through right now as we record this, the works of the editors on the original Star Wars. And so we looked at works that they did beforehand and what about their editing styles informed the way Star Wars turned out, and those sorts of things. A lot of different possibilities out there in the galaxy. So that's where you can reach us. We would love to hear from you. And don't forget, of course, if you would be so kind to head on over to iTunes and give us a review and a rating, we would really appreciate it. If you enjoy the show, reviewing and rating the show on iTunes is a great way to tell the world that you like the show and help other Star Wars fans find what we think is a pretty nifty place to discuss things. So once again, we thank you for joining us. And Matt, I think there's only one thing left to say. I think it's time to close negotiations.
John, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.